Hey everyone, I'm Roy, I'm an addict.
Hi, Roy.
And I'm happy to be here. You know, I love NA, I love this convention. You know, this is not the first time I've been here, but you know, sometimes I'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling about NA. Something about NA will just give me a warm and fuzzy feeling, and I had that happen this weekend, you know, and what I really noticed for the first time was just what a diverse crowd we are, you know. And I don't know about you, but there's not a lot of places I go where the crowd is this diverse, you know. And this is the way I want my world to be, you know. People coming together, common purpose, sharing our joy, sharing our love, sharing our recovery. You know, this is a very beautiful thing for me, and I really appreciate the convention committee for hosting this for us and for all of you for being here. So, and also, you know, this is why holding on to this, not losing this, you know, is why we have the steps and why we have the traditions, right? And you know, step 12, tradition 12, this, you wouldn't think this is a beginner's meeting, right? But, and I know when I was first going to meetings, not when I thought I was an addict, but when I was court ordered, you know, and I'd go to speakers meetings because I didn't want anyone to call on me, right? And I'd be sitting there listening, you know, and I'd say to myself, well, okay, let's just say that I'm an addict. Why do I want to come here? Even if I am an addict, what do I want to come here? What's the payoff? So if you're new, you know, part of what I'm going to talk about is how some of the payoffs I've received over the course of my recovery, you know, and I'm going to do that by talking about the different principles, spiritual principles that have, you know, particularly been relevant for me in my recovery. You know, the tradition 12 talks about putting principles before personalities or ego, right? And step 12 talks about practicing these principles in all our affairs. So this idea of principles, you know, is an integral part, not only for my health and growth and recovery, but for the health and growth of NA as a whole. Right? So with step one and step two, you know, some principles, there's a lot of principles that can apply at different times to these steps, but some common ones, you know, are honesty for step one, right, and faith and hope for step two, right? And these first two steps for me, you know, these are the core of my story for my benefit, you know. I need to never forget that I'm powerless, you know, that my life was unmanageable, and that some power other than me was essential to me getting clean and helping me stay clean and grow and recover. Okay? So for my story, I didn't have a trouble being honest with myself prior to getting clean that my life was unmanageable. I had a felt sense that if I kept doing what I was doing, which was alcohol and cocaine, you know, for me, that was like peanut butter and jelly, you know, where it went together. But that peanut butter and jelly took me to the place those last 6 or 8 months, I had a felt sense that if I kept doing this, I'm going to die. You know, maybe some of you all had that feeling. You know, if I keep doing this, I'm going to die. That's a scary place to be. Didn't get me clean. You know, I tried to quit. I tried to quit for years. I tried to quit because I knew that was in my best interest. You know, and I gird my loins. I have my little techniques to use my willpower. And I might get a day or two or three, you know. But sooner or later, you know, that mind would get to work and that mental obsession. And I'd talk myself. And at the time, it kind of made sense to pick up. Yeah, it would make sense. And then as soon as I picked up, like in a nanosecond, it's like my mind would tell me what an idiot I was. You know? And at that point, it didn't make any difference. Physical compulsion kicked in, and I'm gone until the next time I tried to quit, right? I mean, that was my life for years and years, right? But I couldn't admit that I was powerless. Could not do it because I had no conception or belief in a higher power. I had 12 years of Catholic school, you know, I took to the right and wrong, but the whole God thing, you know, it just never resonated for me because I didn't feel any connection. I didn't feel anything about it. So, you know, I didn't think about it. So when it came to my addiction and being powerless, I couldn't face that. Because if I thought I was powerless, that I couldn't quit on by the strength of my willpower, then I'd be hopeless. And I didn't want to feel hopeless. I was too afraid to feel hopeless. So I'd just keep trying. But nonetheless, you know, I was in this relationship. We had gotten together like 3-4 times. And this, I think, was the third time we'd gone back together. And this time she says, well, you know, if we're going to get back together, you got to go to meetings. So, you know, and I fully agreed that I needed to get clean. I mean, there was no argument about I needed to get clean. You know, going to meetings, well, you know, after the holidays, I voluntarily, for the first time, you know, trudged into a 12-step meeting, thinking this is as low as my life gets. It's never been any lower than me walking into this meeting, talking to these strangers, and thinking somehow they're going to help me get clean. You know? But I did it once a week. And I didn't have too much trouble not drinking. That's not, you know, a big problem for me. But, you know, when my dealer called, I would reward myself for my good behavior. And I binge for a week or two, you know. And that's what I was doing in April of 2000, you know. And it was down the end of my bag. My girlfriend was on the phone. It was my birthday. She was out of town. How dare she be out of town? And when we were talking, she could tell I was zooming, you know. And so when I hung up that phone, we were broken up for, you know, this is it. We're done. Right? Now, in the past, I'd been in other relationships, you know. Whenever they broke up, in my mind, it was always on them. One way or another, you know, something about them caused this relationship to end. But this time, you know, I knew it was on me. And I knew it was on my addiction. Right? So once again, you know, I'm at that crossroads where the thing to do is to stop. You know, a place I'd been many times over the past several years. You know, crossroads concerning my self-respect, my job, my relationship with my daughter, you know, over and over again, where I knew the thing to do was to stop. So once again, you know, I'm going to get that old willpower out, try and stop. You know, it was the Monday. I took off work the Monday, and I got through the day, and it was getting to be nighttime. And all of a sudden, you know, that mental obsession started to talk to me. But this time, I did something different. This time, what I did is I got on the phone and I called a friend of mine, someone I'd known for a long time who I knew was in recovery. You know, and I can still remember the way my voice was cracking when I talked to him. I said, Michael, I got nowhere else to go. You know, and that asking for help, I think that's a key spiritual principle in my story, in my getting clean. And I hear it in a lot of other stories in some way, shape, or form. You know, when I trudged into that meeting in January 2000, you know, I didn't think I was asking for help. But at some level, I was. For the first time, I was asking for help. You know, and I still ask for help. I did it today with a situation with my daughter's angry at me. And my guy friends weren't able to help me with get an answer, but we did kind of arrive that, you know, I need to talk to some women about this. You know, maybe they can give me some guidance. So that's a principle I still practice. But anyways, that Monday, that April 16th, 2000, you know, that marked the day I quit drinking alcohol, I quit using coke, and I quit smoking cigarettes. And that first 2 or 3 months clean, you know, I had a felt sense that there was some power other than me, not other than my willpower, was carrying me. You know, when my mind get to work in and I get to that place where I'd be talking myself into it, something would happen over and over and over again, and eventually that obsession would pass. You know, it kept coming back, but then it would pass and come back. And that is, you know, that's the beginning of my faith, you know, in a higher power, that based on my own life experience, right? I mean, to me, it's the most logical interpretation of my story of getting clean, right? So after I was clean those 2 or 3 months, you know, then, after being clean, then I could look back with honesty and say, yeah, I was powerless over that stuff. I was powerless over cocaine, you know, once I had the clean time. Because I wouldn't feel hopeless. I had hope that I could stay clean. Right? So having that experience, you know, the natural result from that experience is gratitude. You know, that's another That's another spiritual principle that I practice on a regular basis, you know. And the way I practice it today is to give me a full perspective on what my life is at this moment, you know. I've heard it said that our minds are Teflon for good experiences and Velcro for bad experiences. You know, something bad happens, I never forget. You know, and my mind can start working and get all this bad stuff going on, you know, and I get all twisted, right? And it doesn't mean that I'm wrong about what I'm thinking, but it does mean I've lost my perspective because I'm not remembering everything I have in my life going on for me. Everything I have in my life, I have to be grateful for. So that gratitude, you know, helps give me a truer perspective on who I am and what I'm going through. You know, it helps me navigate reality and life on life's terms. From that gratitude also, the gratitude to a power greater than me that got me clean, that saved my life, in my opinion, it saved my life, comes a desire to do service. You know, it just comes, for me, it just comes right out of gratitude, you know, giving back. And I know, you know, after like I was 2 or 3 months clean, I had this sense that I was like, okay, I got carried, but now it's on me, right? And I don't know about you, but before I got clean, I was the kind of a guy like, you know, what's the minimum I got to do? What do I got to do to get, what's the minimum? That's what I was like in school, that's what I was like in relationships, I was like in everything. But when it came to my recovery, you know, that thought, that way of thinking never really arose. You know, I was so grateful to be clean and so not wanting to go back to the hell I was living in before, it was like, what do I got to do? You know, what do I got to do? And I just surrendered to this program, you know, getting the sponsor, doing the 90 meetings in 90 days, being of service, just setting up the 4 meetings, help breaking down the first, eventually chairing a meeting. There's several meetings where I've held every single service position that meeting has, you know. And then over time, those first couple years, you know, people would ask me to go on H&I meetings. And I tell you, if you do chair an H&I meeting, you know, the best thing to do is to take someone in their first year and ask them to speak. Because they need to learn how to tell their story. You know, what better place, especially like at a hospital where everyone's half out of it, you know? give that person a chance to learn how to tell their story, you know? You know, and that's what I learned. I was going to that shelter, not the same shelter Robert goes to, but the one next door. And I did that for a number of years. I took a speaker's meeting, and now I go to the jail. Robert has me on his jail team. I go out there once a month. I still do that, and I do sponsorship. You know, I'm still of service. I'm still of service. And I'll tell you what I got from service. It was I was about 4 or 5 years clean. One day I was shaving, so I was literally looking in the mirror, right? And while I'm shaving, I'm looking in the mirror. That record's playing in my head about, you know, you're no good, you're no good. All that, the long record about all the ways I'm no good, you know, while I'm shaving. And in the middle of the shaving, I just kind of stopped and I said, you know, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. That record's not true anymore. Right. You know, the person that I am today, the way I've changed, the service I've given, I'm a good person. Yeah. I'm a good person. And so for the first time in my life, I felt genuine self-esteem. You know, it just came rushing into me. You know, I mean, I'd faked it forever. And it's not the same as the real thing. It's a real, deep sense of self-esteem, you know, and it's that, and that's the beginning, really, of a deep level of self-acceptance. It's a lot easier for me to accept myself when I'm doing the next right thing, you know, when I'm being of service. You know, these are the gifts of practicing these principles in all our affairs, right? So now I'm going to back up a little bit to my experience with the third step, which is often associated with surrender, which I've already talked about a little bit. But for me, when I got to that third step, I was about 6 months clean when I was kind of thinking about it, you know, just turning my will and my life over. You know, what the heck does that mean? You know, I still have a little trouble understanding. Just what do you mean by that, right? But the real thing was, is I was afraid. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that some power greater than me was, I believe that, got me clean. Trusting that higher power, turning my will and my life over, you know, my life experiences, they didn't teach me to be able to do that with anyone or anything, right? And the other thing is like Robert, when I first came here, I had an attitude of, You know, just show me how not to use. I got the rest. I don't need help with anything, but just show me how not to use. I can control the rest, right? And the thing was, though, but, you know, I kept going to meetings. I was going to a meeting every day. I was listening to people share. You know, I was paying attention. And one day, you know, from all that listening and thinking, it occurred to me, you know, that when I was in charge of running my own life, I did a pretty thoroughly bad job on it. You know, like when I'm behind the wheel of my car, I run off the road. So what I did is, you know, that to me was humility. You know, that was a gift of humility. It didn't come, to me, that was a gift from my higher power, that humility to see that I needed help, not with just getting clean and staying clean, but learn how to live, you know, our third step prayer. And so I was able to surrender and go on with the rest of the program. So that's a gift that keeps giving. You know, that's also a gift that gives me perspective. You know, seeing myself as I really am. Now, I'm going to jump forward now to the 11th step. You know, the 11th step, that's been my wheelhouse for the last 9 years I've been clean. Principles associated with the 11th step are awareness and spirituality. Now, my first 5 years clean or so, you know, I was practicing the 11th step. You know, for me, the prayer and the meditation was every morning I'd get up, and I had this, like, stack of prayers I mimeographed out of a book. It was mostly just poems. It was just somehow the poem really resonated with me. You know, I'd read a few of those poems, and then I'd pick up, you know, Just for a Day, or there were other daily readers, you know, I'd alternate every year. I'd, you know, pick a different two or three I'd read. And then I'd meditate on what that reading meant for me, right? And that process of, you know, saying a few prayers, meditating on some daily readings, that was a big part of my learning how to live life on life's terms. That was a big part of dealing with some of my issues, that some of which I wasn't even aware of. You know, I'd read something that would just open my eyes. You know, but after about 6 years, I started to feel a kind of sense of spiritual emptiness. You know, I've heard it talked about as a hole in the soul. There's a brother, Alexis, some of you might remember, he's no longer with us, but he would talk about this concept of a hole in the soul, and he would say, you know, that's just part of the human condition, that we're always going to have this hole in the soul until we're united in heaven with God. So I guess that's the Catholic theology on this idea, this sense of something missing inside spiritually. There's a guy, William Moyers Jr., his dad was on PBS, he recently retired, but he's one of us, and he wrote an article about hole in the soul. And he held out Michael Jackson as someone that, you know, don't know whether or not he was an addict, but he surely looked like someone that had a problem inside, you know, that had a hole in the soul, you know. And that was what I was feeling. So I said, you know, I want to feel that a real connection with my higher power, and I'm going to really formally try to meditate my way to get it. And I started with about 2007, so I had about a little over 6 years clean, 7 years clean. And I just, you know, I started like 5 or 10 minutes, and I worked my way through. And, you know, eventually I got to this place where when I meditate today, there's a sense, you know, I'm able to calm my mind and just be in the moment. You know, I feel connected to my higher power, you know. I mean, every single day when I sit down and meditate, not the whole time, but there's moments during that meditation period when I feel a sense of connection to something. That's real. Whether or not it's my higher power, I don't know. But what I experience is real, and I believe it's a sense of connection to my higher power. So I feel a sense of spiritual fulfillment, you know, as a result of that, you know, that I certainly wasn't even aware existed prior to my getting clean, you know. So one more story, and then I'm going to wrap it up. I've heard that the arc of the steps being described as we go from self-loathing to self-acceptance to self-love, right? So when I was using, I was full of self-loathing. You know, that was like one of my first month clean. That was like one of my first big insights is, man, you really beat up on yourself, you know? And I would beat up on myself because I knew I needed to quit. I would try to quit, and I would fail over and over and over again. You know, what was wrong with me? I can't stop doing this to myself. You know, just the self-loathing was really thick. And as I've talked about, you know, through being of service and getting some self-esteem, getting some understanding of myself through the literature, you know, experiencing some growth, you know, things like humility, spiritual fulfillment, you know, I've been going through that arc from self-acceptance to self-love. And the self-love is just in the last year. That's really kicked in for me. And I'll tell you how it happened. I was in this relationship that ended in January of last year. Beautiful person, wonderful person, but just not right for me, you know. So I ended the relationship. And then after the relationship was over, you know, I kept getting these deep feelings of longing. Like I was really missing that relationship. I was really missing that sense of feeling connected to her, you know. And it was like an addiction where I had to play the record through, like, you know, why did I end this relationship, you know? But my logical mind couldn't get that feeling to go away. It just kept coming back. There was this deep sense of loss, you know, deep sense of loss and longing. And then in August of last year, you know, while I was meditating, I had the insight, you know, and the insight was, it says, Roy, it's not her that you're missing. What you're missing is you're missing feeling loved. You know, she was the first person that I could, you know, feel her loving me, you know, and I really missed that. And as often happens when I have this type of insight that's a little bit painful, you know, the antidote follows right after that. And I don't know where this came to me, but it just kind of came to me. It says, you know, you can give that to yourself. You know? And I just, you know, I put my hand over my heart, and I start pumping in that love, you know. And it's not the same as someone else loving me, but it hit the spot. And I'm telling you, every day when I do my prayer and meditation, at least during times that day, you know, that hand comes to my heart, you know, and I'm giving myself the love I need to keep growing and healing and recovery, you know. And for that, I'm very, very, very grateful. So thank you all for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you, N.A.